Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 161, and if I sound a little different, I'm coming at you from a hotel room in Bordeaux, France, with Eli Bosnick and Anna Bosnick and Heath Enright. It's a fantastic trip, a little fun get-together and stuff before QED, which is coming right up. If you are anywhere in the area, Manchester area, or somewhere that you can get there easily, there is still time to come hang out. There may not be tickets because they were sold out very early, but Friday has all kinds of fun events that are open to everybody, and I will be there. I will be hanging out with people, so come visit if you can. I'm really looking forward to it. All right, for today's episode, I've got Mandisa Thomas. This is a episode that was recorded a little ways back, but got somewhat preempted by the Kavanaugh stuff because I couldn't help but yell about that for a few weeks. But this was a fantastic interview, really interesting stuff. Mandisa is, of course, the president and the founder of Black Nonbelievers. She's done all kinds of interesting work, very interesting background. And honestly, I'm going to give an opinion here, and this is just me speaking for myself. She was someone that a lot of people thought may be the new leader of American atheists after the previous leader had to step down for Me Too related reasons. And I, for one, am really sad that they ultimately didn't go with her. I think she would have been great, and I think it would have been a chance to finally, you know, allow someone of a different background to head up a major organization. I think it would have been a big step forward for atheism. I think it would have been a really positive step for inclusivity. I think it would have helped reach out to groups of people who maybe haven't been reached out to before by major atheist groups. So it's really too bad. I'm sad that didn't happen. We didn't talk about this in the interview or anything, which is why I just wanted to bring it up here, because that's my opinion and I'm pretty sad about it. Of course, no offense or anything to the leader they did choose. I'm sure it wasn't his call, obviously, but yeah, no, that's too bad. But anyway, that all aside, this is a great interview. I learned a lot. I think you will too. So here we go. Mandisa Thomas. Mandisa, thank you so much for joining me.
I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I'm really excited to talk to you. First question is really about your biography. I'd really love to just learn more about your background, and we can get into the activism you've been doing and the groups you've started and are running and all that good stuff. But let's take us back to the basics. How did it all begin for you in terms of atheist activism?
Absolutely. Well, first, I was born and raised in New York City, in Jamaica, Queens, in New York. Interestingly enough, I was born in 1976. My birthday is coming up in a week. Ooh. And I was born at a time that was very pivotal in the Black community, which involved a lot of identification with Black pride, as well as letting go of any identities that were considered oppressive. So there were a lot of my peers at the time, and myself included, and my brothers being named African names. Mm-hmm. There was an attempt by many Black folks to try to identify with Africa and being Afrocentric, like I said before. And so I was one of those children who was raised pretty eclectically. I was raised pretty secular. Actually, my maternal grandmother wasn't really religious at all, but my paternal grandmother, my dad's mother, is. So I had this very interesting mix of, I had a very diverse upbringing. Raised with learning a lot of knowledge about Black history and culture. I also am a classically trained singer. Oh. And I used to sing with the voice instructor in various churches.
Yeah.
And so I still have what is considered like an outsider's view of church and religion. I have a more comprehensive background as far as learning about the religions or knowing some aspects of the religion without actually being made to follow it. So I was still indoctrinated, though, in other ways. But I wasn't formally raised religious. I remember the first time I was asked if I was atheist was when I was 14 years old. I was in high school, and I was very militant, very pro-Black, and very outspoken. And so someone asked me, was I atheist? And I asked, well, what does that mean? And I was told that I didn't believe in heaven or hell, which to me sounded about right, because I remember thinking as a kid, you know, I used to wonder about death and what happens after we die. And I just remember thinking, well, you know, I tried to reconcile this idea that I would go to heaven once I die. But it always the thought always came back to me because, again, no one had ever come back from the dead. There was never any evidence of anyone saying that they died, or there was no credible evidence of that. So the question kept coming up in my mind. But then after a while, I began to identify as spiritual but not religious, because I told myself that I would never fully believe in Christianity for sure. And from what I remember, my experience and my exposure to Islam was always felt restrictive in addition to Christianity. So I just knew that those weren't the religions for me. I got into atheist activism in 2011. I had the opportunity to meet Jeremiah Kamara for the first time in 2010. He's the producer of the documentary Contradiction, which talks about the influence that the church has had on the Black community and pretty much to a detriment at this point. So had a chance to meet him and also connect with other atheists online. At the time, I was still back and forth. I didn't really, I kind of eschewed the atheist identity for a while. And so, but I kept coming back to it because over the years, I had this kind of hate relationship with religion and Christianity in particular, because most of the Christians I knew were very hypocritical. They weren't necessarily the nicest people. And I found that people who, you know, didn't necessarily treat people any better than anybody else. So I became more familiar with what was going on in atheist communities online. And then I wanted to engage more with people offline. I was told about a meetup that was supposed to be taking place here in Atlanta, a Black atheist meetup. And so, but when I looked online, I couldn't find anything. So I went to the first advertised meetup I could find. But prior to that, I had also talked to other Black atheists online and heard of their experiences with attending predominantly white meetups. And so at first I thought, well, you know, if we're all atheists, then we should be able to find some common ground there and get along. But little did I know that I would experience some of the same things that the others experienced, you know, with going to predominantly white meetups. It ranged from being very welcoming, which was good. But also when you when we began to explain the challenges of being a Black atheist, we were dismissed as if it wasn't, you know, a bigger barrier, or there wasn't more crucial barriers that prevented more, because it was only myself and another Black guy that was in attendance at the meetup. Everyone else was white. So I turned to, you know, I told the other guy, I said, you know, there has to be more of us out here, especially in Atlanta. There has to be more Black atheists out here. Maybe they just don't know that there's a community out here. Or maybe they just don't know that there's an alternative, especially with being Black and atheist. So it was decided that we would start an organization, a group called Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, which was supposed to be just local. We were going to have that space for, you know, Black atheists and others to join us in person, have meetings, have social gatherings, and also connect with other groups in the area. Because at that time, there was very little outreach among the groups. The groups were not cohesive at all. So, you know, we started from there. And over time, there was interest in starting groups in other areas. So the guy at the time had since moved on to other projects. So I had taken on Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta and then increased the scope, shortened it to Black Nonbelievers. And then we started from there. And so from there, we just, you know, kept growing and continued our activities and events. And over time, we became involved with other projects. We started featuring our members that we were contacted by students and other people to have us featured on camera and such. So the progression of starting Black Nonbelievers increased within the span of like a year because we had started doing so much. And there was a lot going on in the atheist community at the time. You know, the Reason Rally was in 2012. And so there was just a lot going on. And I really do have my background and my upbringing to thank for. And I consider myself a bit fortunate that I didn't really have to unlearn religious indoctrination like so many others. But I also understood the value of support. And for people, you know, who are coming out of this, once they come to this understanding that there is no God, or they don't think there's a God, who's going to be there for them? You know, who's going to be a support system? And how do we help navigate each other through these rough waters, unlearning a lot of these stigmas and ideals that came along with being indoctrinated with religion in particular? And so that is what we set up as an organization. And again, I have my background and my upbringing to thank for that, because things haven't been always easy for me, but I'm glad that I had, you know, that I was able to start this organization, and that my vision was appreciated.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So much there. Great storytelling. I just wanted to be quiet and listen for you just told your story in like 10 minutes.
I keep that a lot.
Yeah. This is great, concise storyline. I love it. It makes my job so easy. It strikes me so much to talk about. But one thing I found interesting about your story is, you know, going to that meetup group, having only, I guess you said, two Black people there, and not feeling like it served your interest well enough, which I can very much imagine. But I also wonder, it's so interesting, because it seems as though your background is very much, you were just alluding to this, your background is very much not typical. It seems as though in the Black community in America, it's usually, there's much more religiosity, don't you think? But it sounds as though you had a much more of a secular upbringing. But despite the fact that your background and experience is not exactly typical of the Black community in atheism, it still felt as though this group wasn't serving your interests. And I'm just wondering if you could talk about what elements of the Black experience are unique that you know, white atheists like me might not understand, because I haven't lived that experience.
Absolutely. So yes. The thing about the Black community is not even that I think it, the Pew Research numbers, The Pew Research numbers show that the Black community, 87% of the Black community identifies as religious in some way. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is, and I know I've said this quite a few times over the years, is because of the ties that the church has to the Black community and religion has during slavery, which is an excuse because, religion, the Christianity in particular in the Bible, was imposed on Blacks during slavery. Mm-hmm. But after slavery ended and after Reconstruction ended, once there was that period of time of progression within the Black, within the United States, during the Reconstruction era, after that is when the Jim Crow laws were enacted, and there were laws put in place to effectively disfranchise Blacks. So therefore, there was a reliance and dependence on the church as an institution to provide support and community, right, in particular, amongst most Blacks in this country, and also because there were schools started by religious institutions, historically Black colleges and universities. Yes, the church became a main gathering place for many Blacks, as well as just strategizing place during the civil rights movement in particular. There is a extreme emotional tie to the church within the Black community that seems to render it almost impossible to let it go. Mm. It's like Black has become synonymous with being religious. And once you let go of that identity as religious, then it's seen as you're betraying your race. You're seen as not wanting to be Black because only those white people are atheists. They're the godless ones. Never mind that the Ku Klux Klan ran on a Christian platform.
Yeah.
So, they aren't those, they aren't the good Christians. So there is a significant role that the church has played, especially when it comes to the representation of the community, as well as who was able to speak on behalf of the community back then. The pastor was always held in very high regard during slavery and after slavery. So this is where, you have that traditional tie into who represents the Black community, which does become very, very challenging. That if you let it go, or if you let your views be known, not that it hasn't been done, but it's just that unfortunately, the legacy of the church has obscured the diversity within the Black community, and also because we have such a highly religious presence, which is very much tied into the fabric, the music, the entertainment, politics, everything seems to be governed mostly by Black folks' religious beliefs. And it's like, again, if you are an atheist or if you identify as an atheist, it's like you're not just rejecting God, you're also rejecting being Black.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It must be. It's unfortunate that, the Black community couldn't just take a 90-degree turn and take that same, religious church experience, which I'm sure is so beautiful and so helpful to so many people, but then separate it from like Christianity and dogma. But it makes perfect sense that, when you have decades.
And let me just say, sorry, not to cut you off, Tom.
No.
Let me just say that there are still a huge amount of white folks that still believe in religion, they believe God or what have you. But also when it comes to the systemic racial injustice, economic injustice, those are other factors that need to be taken into consideration as to why Black folks still hold on to the church.
Yeah.
Because there is some validity as to what the role that the church played at a time when the United States as a system has disproportionately affected Blacks and people of color and other marginalized groups very badly. So, yes, I do agree that, yes, it shouldn't be as hard to separate the religion from the you know, or what have you, from the people.
Right.
But when we're talking about the systemic issues as well as the historical aspect, there were other groups of people who were, you know, who were subjugated in this country, like the indigenous populations. I think, though, that the Black experience within this country does need to be understood as to why there is such a high religious presence.
Right.
It doesn't need, that doesn't mean that it needs to be excused, yeah, but that it's understood.
Right. I mean, that makes perfect sense. You know, and dogma and religion are very powerful. I mean, there, I think there's a reason most people are religious. It's not something that it's particularly easy for, you know, a bunch of people to just stop. it's always been a very powerful pull. So it makes sense when you add in, in Black history and Black American history, you add in that community and civil rights tie in and all that, like it makes sense that it would be even stronger, of a pull. But, I was curious, you were talking about when you grew up, kind of in the 70s and 80s and the time that it was when people were rejecting Christianity because of the history there. There's also a turn to Islam in some parts of the Black experience, isn't there, like a kind of an embrace of Islam as the religion that kind of is more tied to Black history? Is that right?
That is correct. During the times, and we're going into one of my favorite heroes, Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Nation of Islam started to rise to prominence in the 50s, the 50s and the 60s is when the Nation of Islam started rising to power and prominence by folks rejecting the Christianity, which was seen as, you know, as whitewashed and Eurocentric, because, yes, the white image of Jesus was burned into everyone's brain. So therefore, yes, Islam, the Nation of Islam in particular, was purporting itself to be the true religion of the Black man or right. Black woman. So,
is that something we still see a lot today, or did that trend go down, up? Do you know anything about that?
There are still quite a few folks that are involved with the Nation of Islam. Their numbers aren't where they used to be, but they still do have a huge presence in major cities, New York in particular. We still see them here in Atlanta. They have always you know, supported themselves by kind of running their own businesses. And at one time, the Nation of Islam was very, very instrumental in helping people get off drugs. And, so we acknowledge the good that they have done. We also acknowledge that, you know, the church had its good use at a time. So, but also ultimately, that the Nation of Islam just became one, you know, cult, just like the church. So,
yeah,
you know, it was very, very much you had to be involved with the religion or else. So, yes, but there was a cult. There was a religious shift where a lot of Blacks converted over to Islam, particularly under the Nation of Islam in the United States.
Right. And it's interesting from an atheist perspective to be like, oh yeah, I'm leaving Christianity. Oh good, where are you going? Islam. Ah,
yeah,
it's a lot of dogma there too.
Yeah, and so you know that when people are searching for that sense of community and belonging, right, as especially as it pertains to identity, especially in this country where, you know, we were taught that, you know, Black is ugly and Black is subservient. There was this sense of, you know, identification with wanting to be strongly and pro-Black. And the Nation of Islam did provide that as an outlet for some time within the 1950s and 60s. I think the 70s, it was still there, but there was more of, you know, you had the rise of the Black Panthers. You had the rise of other groups that were more, you know, politically involved and wanting to take more, you know, action as far as, you know, getting certain rights improved for Black folks, which of course was a serious threat. But it was more loosely based at that time. You know, the Nation of Islam didn't necessarily identify strongly with like African culture or being Afrocentric, but there were others who, the other groups that came about, which did, and other individuals that did. So yeah, it's a very interesting and fascinating history for those who want to research. I mean, it's very, 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 very good learning for sure.
And it sounds like it sounds all the more critical when it comes to Black non-believers in the Black community that if we want people to become less religious in general for the reasons of, you know, dogma and bad beliefs and all that kind of thing, that providing a community that they can go to, you know, to try to replace or fill in for the really strong Christian community that Black Americans tend to have, sounds all the more important. Is that a goal of Black non-believers?
Absolutely, it is. And also, there are just, and I'm just giving an insider here. You know, there are just, the argument continues within the Black community about what it means to be Black.
Yeah.
You know, if you're biracial, are you Black enough? You know, if you're religious or not, are you Black enough? And our space is one where you don't have to question that part. No one will ever have to question whether, you know, your identity, if you will. But what we do challenge are all of the stigmas and notions that come along with being raised religious, as well as this idea of what it means to have gender norms and standards. Because even amongst atheists in general, there are a lot of Black atheists who are still extremely homophobic. They are still extremely transphobic. They are still extremely misogynistic, very patriarchal. The man should be doing this, that, and the third. And so we challenge that. And I know that as a woman leading this organization, I've had to challenge that even as recently as today, someone challenging me on how I should have said something to them when they were being condescending. And it was like, how dare you challenge me? And you're supposed to be a leader. You're supposed to take everything into consideration, even though I'm being this asshole.
Yeah.
And so, this idea that a woman, you know, dares challenge that is still something that we push back against. So yeah, just challenging that notion of what it means to, you know, be Black and having that space from that and having this space where you don't have to prove yourself if, you know, you like something that may be considered more Eurocentric in nature, but also that, you know, we're open to learning and also, you know, increasing the knowledge about that, but also, you know, just having that, you know, just making sure that we're having that welcoming environment for people to learn and build as well as educate.
Yeah. And what came to mind when you're talking about that to me is it's why I find the concept of intersectionality to be so useful. And it's so weird to me that it's such a, for large swaths of the online atheist community, it seems to be this controversial or even scary term to them, but it seems to make so much sense to me when you talk about the intersections of race and gender and gay rights and all these different things that are going to affect you differently, that are going to affect each person's identity differently. You know, it strikes me it's so different to be a white Christian versus a Black atheist or a white woman versus a Black man. I mean, there's just so many differences in those variables. And I feel like they're kind of embodied in your story here. And it just seems to me that intersectionality is such a useful way to understand that.
Absolutely. And as much as certain white people would love to think that we're all on equal footing, that, you know, that race doesn't matter. It does. When you consider the, you know, the huge presence of atheists within the you know, of and the number of white atheists as opposed to other people of color. When you see that whites are still more represented than, you know, than others, and also who we hold as the spokespersons, most of your white atheists will point to other white atheists. And so, and that's just supposed to make everyone comfortable, and it doesn't. Yes, acknowledging that there are communities in this, and honestly, sorry, just to back it up a little bit, I remember seeing a quote somewhere that, you know, whites were the one who made race an issue in the first place. You know, like when it came to domination and when it came to conquering other people, they're collectively whites were the ones who made this an issue. So you don't get to just ignore it or act like it doesn't matter. It does. And when you have these experiences and when you know the history and such, you have to take that into account.
Absolutely. And I'm in the middle of Stamped from the Beginning. And I think it really excellently points out that very thing. This idea, there's this idea, and it's so depressing because it infects people like Sam Harris and a lot of his crowd. And I've been very critical of that, because there's this idea that, like, well, white is kind of neutral, and then like other groups bring in identity politics, you know, and it's so frustrating, especially when you read a book like Stamped from the Beginning and you come to find out, as you just said, you know, race was made an issue by white people as a justification to be able to conquer and take over and do whatever they want to all these other groups of people, you know, like that. That's the identity politics. You know, identity politics goes back forever. It's not some new thing that these groups are bringing into the mix that we ought to get rid of.
Yes, absolutely. It's a very, very novel idea for us to do that. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, we still have work to do. We really do. And so, you know, when it comes to, like I said, when it comes to those politics, you know, they're going to, they're going to have to accept that this will be, as long as people try to ignore it, the more it's going to come up, and it won't go away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's best to address it now, as well as rethink because there are many white folks when I give presentations on a history of humanism and atheism in the Black community, this is information that they don't know. And sadly, there are other Blacks who don't know it either, but especially because they didn't have to think about that. But we do. So,
right.
When they put themselves in our shoes and how we have to look at it, then hopefully things will change.
Yeah, it does feel like 2016 was a big step backwards in empowering a lot of people and emboldening a lot of people that, you know, I for one had previously thought maybe weren't as active anymore, but it turned out they were just being a little quieter, I guess, until they were emboldened.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you view it? Do you think you're making progress though? Do you think Black atheism is growing? Do you think what are the signs? I know, actually, it was super cool when I think Arian Foster came out as atheist, right? That was a few years back. That was a major thing. So is it becoming more acceptable in the Black community, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, Arian Foster still holds he still walks a fine line because, you know, we tried to connect with him and we weren't able to. And so there is some progress. Hmm. There have been Blacks who have challenged religion and there are now more, we have seen a rise of openly identified atheists that are in the Black community and also who have come to it as a result of finding Black non-believers. I do think that there's still some work to be done, but yes, if we're able to, if the more people who can openly identify as possible, the better. And I'm also glad that we've been able to facilitate that. So yes, there has been some progress. There also has been some progress with the representation in literature. There are Black atheist authors, other Black atheist activists, speakers, as well as talent. So we are still, more of us are making our voices known and heard, and we are, we're coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you optimistic these days? I find myself not being optimistic, but your answer sounded pretty optimistic, and I would love it if you were, because that would make me feel better. How do you feel about it?
I am to an extent, but it's also discouraging. Yeah. Sometimes it gets very, very stressful because it's like, gosh, it's such a labor. This has been such a labor of love, if you will. And trying to get folks to genuinely support the mission of the organization without there being something in it for them, and also getting them to do, you know, the work has been quite difficult. I recently, as I announced at the American Atheist Convention this year, I resigned from my job to take on activism full time. And I hesitated on that for a few years because I know I needed to sustain some income. But as the, you know, as the visibility increased, as the requests of the demands of the movement increased, I decided that now was the time for me to jump full in into activism more than I already was. So, I was already very, very fully immersed in the movement while working a full-time job. So now this is my full-time work. I'm hoping to get it to a point where it is more paid work, but you know, we're hopefully getting there. Sometimes the perceived naivete of folks who act like they don't understand, those who want my input and the input of the organization and the work of the organization without fully supporting it, does become tiring at times. But at the end of the day, when I know that people are being helped as a result of us being here, then I know that what we're doing is the right thing. I know I did the right thing.
Yeah.
Because I have engaged quite a few people in this movement, and I know I will continue to engage more. And that has been very, very positive. That has been very, very rewarding more people are understanding and getting to see the work that we've done.
That's really exciting. I know that's definitely a scary leap, I'm sure. How has it been? I mean, I know that's a scary decision to make, but it sounds like you sound positive on it. I hope it's going well.
It is, for the most part. I'm able to, you know, attend other events and travel and speak and do things on behalf of the organization without having to stress out to go to work Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So yes, that has been a plus. I've also established a Patreon account where I talk about community building and also other, subjects that I may offer my crazy opinions on that I don't necessarily write on Facebook, if you will. So that's been another way to, you know, have people help support my activism because, you know, I still have bills to pay.
Right. So, yeah. Feel free to toss that out if you want. You're so kind enough to share your time. So feel free to give out your Patreon.
Oh, thank you. Yes. The link to my Patreon is Mandisa Latifah. I'd have to give you the link to the show because you can't just search it because it contains adult content.
Oh,
so
okay.
You'd have to actually type it in. But also the increase in exposure was great. You know, I was featured in both the Humanist magazine and Playboy magazine in the July, August issues of both magazines. I was also recognized as the Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association's Person of the Year. And so, that has been great. I'm very, very proud of that. So this has been, it's been a really, really good year. It's been great since I've left the job. Of course, yes, I was a little nervous about it because, we're in two income household, I still have to, my husband has a pretty decent job, and has been very supportive. You know, I still have to contribute to the household too.
Right, so, yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad to have been able to do so, and do what I need to do as far as the activism and growing that part of it because that needed to happen. So, with that, it has been very, very good, for the most part. And very, very happy that I made that decision. It was a necessary one for a number of reasons, not just the activism, but taking into account, you know, my family as well as myself. It was a move that I needed to make.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a tremendous amount of work if you're doing a full-time job and trying to organize as much and as well as you have been. But going back to the optimism thing as well, you know, what makes you optimistic? Are you, it always seems like, I guess I've been in atheism for, well, I don't know, an organized, I'm not really in it, but I've been paying attention to it for, I don't know, 8-9 years, something like that. And it always feels like we're right on the threshold of a demographic, you know, boom. Like it's, young people are so irreligious. And, you know, it always feels like we're right there. And I guess, you know, 9-10 years isn't that long, but still, it always feels like we should be making a ton of progress, but I'm never sure if we actually are. Are you optimistic about youth and as regards Black atheism in particular?
I am. I'm very, very optimistic about the number of younger folks who are coming out of their religion. Amongst the younger folks, though, there is still an issue when it comes to dealing with their parents who are religious. You know, they can't be out even though they're on their college campuses. Mm. You know, they have to be very careful whether they, whether they openly identify or not. So that is still a grave concern for them. And that's also a grave concern for us. So we need to make sure that we're there for them. And so I am optimistic about the number of folks who are finding us and who are coming to us. And we just, you know, we just need to be diligent about how we offer our support and guidance on helping them with their journey. I think the very nature of people determines that not everyone will be on the same page and definitely not at the same time. So accepting that sometimes people will be people. I've learned to navigate that and say, hey, you know what? Those who are with us, fine. Those who are not, okay. It's been difficult. It's been a part of the managing process of being in this movement and dealing with people. So I've learned to gauge my battles and what I will focus my time on. Mm. And I've chosen to focus more on dealing with the people and still meeting with the people, no matter what, you know, on various issues, because really getting people together in person and mobilizing and just building that community has been really, really great, because that lets people know, for one, they're not crazy. And, you know, there are others who can understand and identify, and there are others who they might be able to, to work with. So that has been a really, really good thing to have facilitated. And I'm glad to see that movement is growing.
Yeah. What do you think from your experience and all the work you've done, what has been your experience and your view of the kinds of things that maybe help deconvert or help people leave their faith? You know, is it typically it's on YouTube, there'll be like debates and stuff like that, and I never am sure how effective that even is. What do you have any opinions on what kinds of content or what kinds of arguments or what it is that actually helps people leave their religion?
I think it's a mixture. There are many people who are inspired by the debate, some inspired a little bit too much by them. There are others who, again, they said they become atheists by reading the Bible.
Yeah.
And also doing research, you know, so the whole.
So you're saying we need to hand out Bibles, get an atheist right. group together and just hand out Bibles.
You hand them out so you can and actually read it.
You know,
don't take it to your pastor to be, you know, interpreted.
Right.
But I mean, honestly, I have never read the Bible in its entirety, and I was an avid reader growing up.
It's boring. It's the worst book ever. It's
yes.
so bad.
It's one
I've
of the
read
worst
it.
Books ever.
It's so bad.
Yes. It is horrible. And really myself is. Being a reader, I could never get into it. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this book is just the worst. No wonder why people don't read it. And no wonder you can, you can kind of better understand how many people can become so wrapped up in the religious part of it and just going by what their pastor says, as opposed to actually reading that book for itself. Again, that doesn't make it an excuse, but you can certainly understand how that happens.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's an advantage for Christianity for the Bible to be so long and horrible. Like nobody, even wants to bother with it. So it's like, you can just kind of, all right, you know, pastor, whoever, just kind of give me the broad strokes. Just explain to me what's in it. I can't do it. Yeah. I read the entire thing. It's awful.
It exacerbates the intellectual laziness and, you know, not that it causes it, but it certainly makes it worse.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I also think that seeing, you know, speakers on YouTube and also seeing them in person, you know, seeing other people people seeing the work that is being done as well. So it is a mixture. For some people, it is a process. You know, some folks like me were pretty much already there with the religion. But as far as the community part and support, you know, we realized that aspect needed to be developed more. There are some others who, again, the debates, you know, strengthening their arguments when they are, when they're challenging believers or if they confront believers in any way, then that's how they draw strength. I tend to think that those who are in it to really build with others, that has a more longer lasting positive effect. Because then that way, that to me establishes a better foundation and is more productive. Now, others may find that I'm wrong, but there have been different methods for people. Some have incorporated all of them and others have just, maybe used one or two. But for the most part, you know, some people have tried the different religion thing. They jump from Christianity to Islam and Buddhism and such, and then they've just transitioned their way out. So, again, there's no one, you know, there's no one right way, or there was no one way for many people.
Sure. Yeah.
I would just encourage many people, as many people as possible, to check out Black Nonbelievers as an organization. Visit our website. We have an amazing event coming up, our convention at sea in November. There's still time to register and sign up if you'd like to join us. We have some wonderful speakers, and we also have some wonderful people on board from all backgrounds. So please check out our website at blacknonbelievers.org. We're also on Twitter at BNonbelievers. The B and the N are capitalized. You can find all of our active groups on the website. You'll be automatically connected to the meetup pages. And so if you want a better understanding of what we go through, then please, again, check out our website. Feel free to ask us objective questions as much as possible. And we hope to better, facilitate and win your support.
That's awesome. Convention at Sea. Is this a cruise or something? That sounds really cool.
It is a cruise. We'll be aboard the Carnival Sensation right after Thanksgiving. We did it last year, which was an amazing event. Yes, sailing out of Miami to Turks and Caicos in the Dominican Republic. And we will also have the convention portion where we'll have speakers and other presenters. So, yes, it's going to be a great time. If you've never been on a cruise before, it's a great opportunity.
That sounds really fun.
Intimidating.
Just in time after Thanksgiving, when you have to hear from your religious family, you know, you can take a nice vacation after that. Yeah.
And the weather was great too. So we hope the weather holds up again this time. It was in the mid to high 80s. So it was wonderful. And it was so great to see so many people on this cruise too. The cruise ship holds about 2,000. So in addition to meeting the other folks with the convention, you're meeting a whole bunch of other people too, which was a great experience.
That sounds really fun. And definitely I'll include all those links in the notes. And Mandisa Thomas, thank you so much for coming on and giving me some of your time and helping us learn about your background and the work you've done. It's really interesting.
Thank you so much for having me once again. I really appreciate it.
All right, that's that's it for today's show. Thanks again to Mandisa. Definitely consider supporting her on Patreon. A great person to support in the community. And I'm so glad she came on. And once again, I hope to see you at QED. So feel free to shoot me a message or anything if you're going to make it. And say hi. Totally feel free to say, come up and say hi. Unless I'm giving a talk or in the middle of something. But no, I'm looking forward to it. And with that said, I will see you next week.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.